Good evening and welcome back to the Georgia 2024 show. Todd Wood is on special assignment tonight. I'm Bill Quinn. And tonight we'll have a very interesting set of things to discuss. There's lots going on in Georgia, in Arizona, in Washington, and a number of different movements being made by folks that are both in support and apparently in conflict with the incoming administration of President Trump. Before we get going on all of that, please help us to make sure that we are able to deploy our team in the best possible way. The easiest way you can do that, consider investing in our no-ad subscription. It gives you no ads across our entire spectrum of 13 publications all across the country and, in fact, around the world so that you can enjoy those publications, scan them, get the content, and not have to deal with the ads. It's just $10 a month, $100 for the entire year, and really helps us make sure that we have the very best resources deployed the best way so that we can bring you the news and bring it to you quickly and effectively. So thank you for considering that. If you have the means, please join. So as we get going tonight, we're going to talk about some of the things that have happened in Georgia. We're looking forward to welcoming a very special guest, General Paul Vallely of the U.S. Army, and he'll have some interesting perspectives to share regarding what's going on post-election and pre-inauguration. We'll also hear about a very troubling study that's been done regarding the after effects of COVID and the jabs. Centered around Kings County, which is the county in which Seattle rests. And we'll also talk about some of the other kind of bizarre moves going around through government and through the various organizations that are now going to be affected one way or another. So we'll have all of that this evening. Before we get going, let's hear from one of our very good sponsors, David Cross.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Okay. So one of the things that people have been wondering about was what was the effect here in Georgia of a judge's order last month requiring the boards of election to certify their elections regardless of any concerns and certify them by the 12th, essentially yesterday. Well, very, very interestingly, Jason Frazier pointed out today that despite many different unusual factors surrounding the elections in both Cobb and Fulton County, the Board of Elections was forced to certify their ballots, their election results. But notably, they had to do it without benefit of any electronic means. So in other words, rather than being able to review results, review ballots, review anything via their notebooks, laptops, and so forth, they were allowed only to use paper and pencil, or paper and pen. Isn't that remarkable? Now, keep in mind that on the flip side of this, they won't allow the infamous they here in Georgia will not consider nor allow the votes themselves to be done on paper via any particular means, whether it be pencil, pen, or anything else. They must be done through the electronic machines. Yet they won't allow electronic machines to be used to help folks review those results within the context of the Board of Elections. Just remarkable. And Jason Frazier, as many recall, is a longtime advocate and activist for election integrity, especially in Fulton County and was blocked from being able to take a seat on the Board of Election by the county commission over the last year. His seat has now been assigned to and allocated to Julie Adams. And Julie made a very interesting comment after the board took a vote to essentially bar any electronic means of reviewing the vote outcomes. I believe the word was ridiculous. So we need to keep our eyes on this going forward. This isn't over yet. There are reports coming in, as we reported over the last few days, from many states, Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, even Wisconsin, I believe. And especially in the down ballot races, there are continuing and serious concerns about what those races show. In some cases, extra ballots have been showing up through the course of the time when the state should simply be counting the ballots that they already received. So how could more ballots be introduced into the process? In other cases, totals seem to be changing at odd times and in odd ways. So we will continue to report on this. We need to keep, especially here in Georgia, we need to keep our eyes squarely on what's happening and where. And it seems that the places to do that right now are Fulton and Cobb counties. All right. And there's a picture of the board as they take that infamous vote to eliminate any electronic means to review their results. So the other thing that's been going on the last few days, of course, is consideration of who will be the Senate majority leader for the Republican Party. There were three nominee names that kept surfacing over the last few days: John Thune, John Cornyn, and Rick Scott. And by far, most folks had concerns about Thune because of lack of support of Trump in the past. Cornyn, for much of the same reason. And Rick Scott seemed to have the grassroots support of many, not just here in Georgia, but really all across the country. When they went through voting today, which was done theoretically, apparently in secret, but the results seemed to be making their way to the public gradually. There was a list of folks who had voted, in fact, for Rick Scott in the first round, but unfortunately, it was few, and Rick Scott was eliminated in that first round, and then there was a second round taken to determine the leader between Thune and Cornyn. This list was offered by Amy Kremer during the middle portion of today. These are the people who are said to have voted for Rick Scott in that first round. So these, at least at this stage, these are the only ones that seem to have an ear to what the public, what the people wish to see in their majority leader. It was very interesting to see the dynamics play out because inside the Senate and inside the staffing, you could see both folks acknowledging that many of the public were weighing in, but you could also see some pushback. And we'll talk a little bit about each of those. So here's one case where this gentleman reports that Senate GOP aides this morning, they are getting emails and guidance that the public wishes to offer to their bosses, the senators, in other words, about how they wish the senators to vote. And this one seems, you know, fairly cordial. It expresses an interest in, you know, in having support for Rick Scott, says that they'll be watching and watching closely. Not unkind, but quite direct. But on the other side of the equation, there was pushback from some of the senators and others, perhaps, suggesting that they really didn't like this kind of feedback. Here's a note that seems to indicate that this person, apparently representing or speaking for a GOP senator, they really don't like hearing what Tucker Carlson or ostensibly their constituents think about who they should vote for. They call it bullying. Now, keep in mind that these folks are sitting in their seats because of the folks who voted for them. The people that voted for them are, in fact, you know, the people they answer to, and should be the first place that they go to look for feedback and guidance as to what the public wishes them to follow through on. Well, if that's the case, you would be surprised by this kind of feedback from a senator saying, "Well, I don't much like this. This is trying to bully me into a decision." I don't think it's bullying. Many folks would say that they are simply offering their thoughts, their guidance, and who they wish and who they believe would best represent their interests as the Senate Majority Leader. Seems odd that the senators would be pushing back on that. Ultimately, a vote was taken, and John Thune was selected as the Senate Majority Leader over Cornyn. Here's a picture that represents that. And an independent reporter, Nick Sorter, posted this and indicated that this was portrayed as a betrayal to Americans that wanted Rick Scott. So we thought it would be interesting to take a quick peek at both Cornyn and Thune and see their background. What had they been involved with recently? Well, here's a picture of Senator Cornyn on the right-hand side there with the white hair. He happens to be the tallest in the bunch. Posing for a picture with who else? Zelensky. Now, keep in mind that Zelensky, over the past year and a half, has led his country in war. But in addition, he's also closed churches, arrested priests, and proposed Marina Abramović to be the ambassador for Ukraine. So this gives you a sense of who Mr. Senator Cornyn is happy to have a photo with. Let's take another look. Here is Thune also posing with Zelensky. And let me offer one of my personal favorites. There is Thune with Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney. Liz Cheney, you will recall, was one of the principal characters on the J6 committee, clearly not a Trump supporter, and did many things that they could to ensure that Trump had problems even staying in power through the J6 hearings. Ultimately, you'll remember that they destroyed any evidence that they found, thereby preventing it from being used for anybody else's case or benefit. Dick Cheney, too, you'll recall, came out absolutely contrary to Trump prior to his election. So this gives you a sense of Mr. Thune and his belief system and so forth. So clearly there's trouble in paradise here. We have folks that are working against Trump in many regards. We'll see a couple more perhaps later in the show. We'll take one quick break, and then we're going to welcome our first guest for the evening, General Vallely.
Contagion Kit is something new. Can you tell us about that and what's in it and what it's for?
Well, the Contagion Kit is specifically geared towards a respiratory virus. It mm-hmm. includes some of the medications that we've been talking about that are well known to be able to treat respiratory viruses. And mm-hmm. importantly, it includes a nebulizer, a mm-hmm. way to aerosolize a liquid medication so that you can breathe it into the lungs. Mm-hmm. Again, these kits are not meant to replace your doctor or a relationship with a doctor. They are not meant for you to fly solo. We have telemedicine visits mm-hmm. available if you have any questions about the symptoms you're having. There is a booklet in there as well that supports and kind of coaches you through what symptoms you may be having from something. So these aren't meant to be a panacea to replace mm-hmm. everything in medicine. It's a way, however, for people to feel and to be prepared to be at the ready, to be more resilient, and to be more immune from the sorts of intrusions that we saw during COVID, where your insurance company or your own doctor or the pharmacist or the pharmacy was refusing to let people get a hold of medication.
All right. We are delighted to welcome our first guest for this evening, General Paul Vallely. General, thank you so much for making time for us this evening, sir.
Yeah. Hi, Bill. It's actually Vallely.
Vallely.
A lot of vowels in there. Vallely.
Thank you, sir.
Bill, happy to be with you.
Happy to have you with us, sir. So we are in an interesting time. I think you'd agree. We are post-election. Yet you see a number of comments online and, across just about everybody we're talking to. You know, it seems quiet. It seems like there's another shoe yet to drop somewhere. And we actually have seen comments in the media itself with folks portraying that there may be some sort of chaos yet to come. You've done a lot of work on this, I know. Why don't we start with your general comments about where you think we are in the schema of all of this?
Well, first of all, overall, I'm very happy with the way this week has turned out, and the American people really became awakened and realized that we have to put America back together again after it's been dismantled over the last 4 years. And so it's a big rebuilding, restructuring process. I think so far, President Trump is going out and seeking some very qualified people for his cabinet, and those that think out of the box and are not entirely what we would call bureaucrats. They're not part of that deep state, and they never have been. So I'm very positive about the outlook, Bill.
A number of folks have spoken of, as you say, bureaucrats. Would you consider what's called the SES or Senior Executive Service to be at least in part in that group?
Well, we did an article about 2 years ago. I wrote it defining the deep state, and we defined it in four stages or categories. The first stage would be your political appointees. Okay, they go into the Secretary of Defense, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Policy, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Then the next level down, Bill, you have what we call the Senior Executive Service, SES. These are very high ranking, rank of general or admiral, and they're seated and really run the organizations for the most part. They are the true bureaucrats there and getting paid a lot of money to have that designation. Then the third part of the deep state are your day-to-day managers. They're managing the offices, the organizations, the things that make those organizations tick. And then the lower part are your minions or your people that are working for the managers. They could be staffers, typists, clerks, whatever. But it's all affected by who's ever put at the top there as a political appointee that mm-hmm. determines what happens as we go down that stack within the deep state. So I know that's a simplistic answer, but I think it pretty well defines what the deep state is.
But it was very interesting to me to hear Trump consistently speak of both external enemies and internal enemies. And in almost every case, he would say that the internal enemies were perhaps more dangerous. And I found that sort of, you know, prophetic in all of this as we go to make change. And we seem to see people standing up now in direct opposition to some of Trump's plans. And yet every day he seems to announce another couple of very interesting plans. Are you surprised by who is coming out saying, well, we're simply not going to cooperate with some of these things, governor of Massachusetts and others?
Well, this is, this was probably put together very hurriedly, but it was a whole new defense and offense against Trump. And I say put together because, you know, the way the Democrats operate, I think a small group of the people that are running the government under Obama they get together and chat, and they say, well, what should we come out and today? What should we say? What's our statement of the day? Uh-huh. And as you know, they all come out with the same damn statement. So, you know, it's programmed, and it's a way for them to use information warfare against the American people, as far as I'm concerned. They're very good at it. But now I think the American people understand that the media, along with the deep state people and the puppet government, as I call it, are failing and have failed. And that's why they're very happy to see President Trump return and will be the president of the United States on January 20th.
So we're, gosh, it seems like weeks have gone by. There's been so much that's come out, but it's really right. just been a small number of days. We still have quite a period of time to get through before sure. Trump is inaugurated. Do you sense a level of, risk in this time?
Oh, I do. I think they've got a number of plans, options that they'll exercise as we go along here each week. The next sensing I have that they'll start attacking the nominations and the selections of the cabinet for Trump. I think that will be their next exploitive offensive operation in information warfare, as I call it. I think then after that's not going to work. They'll probably try to disturb and create some kind of chaos in this third period of time up through the holidays.
There's been some interesting reports out of Michigan that FEMA appears to be staging a number of tractor trailers full of goods of some type, and people are questioning why that would be happening and happening when in that location to for what purpose. Have you been able to get any intel on what may be going on there as yet?
No, I don't have any information on that, Bill, but again, they're planning, they're trying to position, just like the crazy stuff that went on after the hurricane in North Carolina, for example. So FEMA's lost a lot of credibility. That's why we have to put taking care of our people back in the state's hands and not at these organizations like FEMA at the national level. It just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that seems to be very much the case, especially in places like North Carolina. I think you're aware Todd Wood has been to North Carolina twice now, well, maybe three times, actually, now that I think of it, and is uncovering both what may be in store for things, little tricks that they're trying to play on land and homeowners, but also watching what is being done and what isn't being done, you know, to aid the people that still need help. And it is a shame, yet it is encouraging to see the number of folks that have stepped in, private individuals and companies better able to serve them, in fact, than FEMA. And
right.
it's been sort of an education for everybody else. You know, maybe this is something, you know, the rest of us need to be prepared to step in and do when needed, because we can't count on FEMA or the government to do. Perhaps
it just shows you how they've politicized and militarized these agencies and organizations of our federal government. I mean, the fact that woman in FEMA would not allocate any aid support, funding support, if you had a Trump sign in front of your home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how they weaponize and militarize our organizations. And that's going to go away big time.
Yep. I think, I think too that the folks that are in the spotlight now seem to be pushing back. There's a little video of one Jeremy Bash. I think he's one of the intelligence operatives that of the 51 that said, oh, well, the Biden laptop is in fact real, and basically falsely created a part of the narrative. He seems to be pushing back currently. I have a short video of something that he said today. Perhaps we can share that.
Constitutionalist means you believe and subscribe to the view of separation of powers in our constitutional system. And you kind of hit this at the top of the show. We're going to be entering a period in which Donald Trump not only controls the entire executive branch, he'll control, his party will control the Senate, probably the House, and a significant majority of the U.S. Supreme Court. So anybody who's taken civics understands that when you control all three branches of government with a political party, it's much more challenging to have checks and balances. And so as difficult as it is to contemplate this at this moment, Nicole, I think we have to rely on Republicans, Republican elected officials, Supreme Court justices, and people inside government and outside government who are willing to continue to have checks and balances, to continue to hold the executive branch accountable. If there's an unlawful order given to the United States military, I expect, and I think it will be the case, that uniformed military will not carry out unlawful orders.
That seems to be an odd position and a troubling position, perhaps, for him to take. What do you think?
Well, I mean, they love to create confusion and chaos. And I mean, this is old part of their program, their information warfare program, as I call it, having been in the strategic PSYOP business, part of my military career. Yeah. But we're not buying into that crap anymore. And that's all it is. These people, these bureaucrats supported by these left-wing ideologues, you know, that have done so much to, upset our military, disturb our military, CRT, DEI, transgender, the wokeness of our generals and admirals today. And so all of these programs, we've realized from the majority of the American people that it's all been phony, it's been fraud, it's been trying to dismantle our Constitution and our government. But we're wise. I know in Montana, we're just so happy out here that we're going to get our leader back again. And he's going to rebuild our Constitution and our faith in our country and our economics, the economy, rebuild our military. And I'm just very happy that we've made this big turn.
Yeah. One last question for you. The things that he's been doing is posting these, I'll call them short videos. Some are 4 or 5 minutes long. And they talk about his vision in a number of different areas. I think he's up to 10 or 12 now that he's released. One of which is actually quite fascinating. He talks about the use of 0.5% of federal land to potentially be used for folks to make proposals about 10 new cities in the U.S. And as part of that, he also happens to mention, by the way, we're going to be taking a quantum leap in technology and looking at vertical takeoff and landing vehicles for families. Were you surprised by either of those? That sounded fascinating, and lots of people have gotten awful excited.
Well, they are exciting. They're already building these air taxis already that on the ground they take off and there they go.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new technology. The new vehicles that Elon Musk and his company are designing, it's just unbelievable. So we have a lot to look forward to. But I'm concerned on the near term here now, Bill, about maybe external threats. The cartels are going to be taken down. Tom Homan, we sent our plan, Operation Sinaloa, to Tom and others in the pipeline to the Trump team. Mm-hmm. That special operations is in order. 2:00 in the morning, 7 days, the cartels are gone. And Tom Homan, in the meantime, will prioritize the deportation of the criminals and people that should not be in this country. So I think it's all going to be very well planned. We've recommended to Trump he bring in 4 to 6 retired generals, for example, and that they will go through the leadership in the military and the structure in the military and make sure we get non-performers, especially a lot of the 3 and 4 stars that bought into the vaccines, bought into the CRT DEI training, which went all the way, by the way, down to our academies. And we want to get rid of those generals and admirals because they're not ones that are going to win wars for us. And when you look at it, we really haven't won a war since World War II.
That's right.
Unnecessary wars. Yeah.
That's right. Most people haven't looked at that. There's also been many conflicts that have started without real congressional approval. And it seems that, you know, the checks and balances in this case have been circumvented in some cases. Homan seems like a pretty interesting and forthright character, doesn't he?
He's tough. He knows his business. He'll know how to prioritize the deportations, and I'm very confident it'll be well done. It'll certainly tick off the left wingers and the sanctuary city people. But Tom Homan's the right man for the right job at the right time.
That's great. He had a he made a couple of very interesting statements. I happen to have a little clip of him too, if you'll bear with me here. But I like the way he talks. I like the way that he positions what's in his planning.
I got a message. As a guy who spent 34 years deporting illegal aliens, I got a message to the millions of illegal aliens that Joe Biden's released in our country in violation of federal law. You better start packing now.
There you go.
That kind of sums it all up, right? Doesn't it?
I understand, Bill. They're already packing in the swamp.
Well, there are some very interesting reports of folks potentially making some moves to facilitate a return to from whence they may have come. So we will see. We will see.
Absolutely.
Anything else you'd like to share? Any other perspectives that you think are important at this stage, General?
Well, just a couple things I'll throw out here is the strategy, particularly in dealing with our enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't think China now is going to go forward and take Taiwan. I think Trump will meet with Putin, and I don't know whether you knew it, but I set up the first meeting between Putin and Trump in March of 2017 when I was in Moscow speaking.
Oh, wow.
So I think from the standpoint of already you see a change in the Middle East, the attitude. They kicked Hamas out of the UAE. Iran's probably trying to figure out what the hell to do next. The IDF has really destroyed much of Hamas and Hezbollah, and the Houthis are quiet. So there's a lot of things happening overseas. I know it probably has a lot of the NATO members and European Union members worried that America is going to have leadership again, because Trump minces no words. He says what he means and means what he says. And he knows how to negotiate. He knows how to work with a Putin and a Xi. I'm really looking forward to this whole new administration. I'm really concerned about the restructuring and re-imaging of our military. One of the recommendations we've made is to have a command-driven military. That basically we get rid of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We don't need them. We don't need all the duplication of the staffs in the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. We want to change the name of the Defense Department to the Department of the Armed Forces of America. That's our new name for the Pentagon, the Armed Forces of America. And rather than having a Chief of Staff of the Army, he's going to be the Commander of the Army, Commander of the Air Force, Commander of the Navy, Commander of the Marines. And it's going to be led by a 5-star general or admiral who reports directly to the president, and get rid of all of the staffing and all this duplicity that we have within our military structure. So those are just some of the ideas we've given to Trump.
That sounds fascinating. Please share the organization that you have created so that folks can learn more about the strategies that you're proposing and the other things that you're involved with, if you would.
No, thank you, Bill, for the opportunity. Yeah, General McInerney and I formed the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation in 2007. We've been around a long time. We do analysis, intelligence analysis reports. Our 6 books are very popular, Beyond Treason, Dismantling of America. They're all on our website, standupamericaus.org, standupamericaus.org. Our weekly newsletter comes out every Saturday. You can sign up for that. That newsletter, by the way, is opened up in 16 different countries. Wow. So we have a lot of exposure for radio, television interviews, events that we put on. And again, we provided the Operation Sinaloa to Trump to take down the cartels. Then also the Trump military restructuring plan, as we call it. We've given that to Trump. And that's one of the reasons we see him implementing some of the things we recommended. But we've got a great staff. We've got a lot of good people. We depend on donations. So if you can write us a check, we would really appreciate that. And get our books. They're the Bible of what's happening in the country right now. We've given those all to President Trump, by the way.
And if my hunch is right, a lot of people are going to want to know more about what you're proposing so they can see and feel like they're participating and understanding what's happening while it is. Thank you so much for making time for us. You've been wonderful throughout all of this. And I know we'll be talking again soon as things continue to progress. General, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
What a great discussion, and a great gentleman driving his organization based on his background and skills. So we will take one more break, and we will come back, and we're going to talk about some findings that have come out of the Seattle area that we think are very important and probably go beyond those just in the Northwest.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
So next, we're going to hear from Nick Holscher. Nick has worked with the McCullough Foundation. He's an epidemiologist and researcher, and has been part of a number of different research projects they've done, the most recent of which is one surrounding the follow-on effects, I guess we'll call it, of both COVID, but more importantly, perhaps the jabs in the King County area, which surrounds Seattle. Let's hear what Nick had to share in our discussion today. We are delighted to be joined by Nick Holscher. Nick is an epidemiologist and researcher with the McCullough Foundation. Nick, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We noted just this week that a study has been brought out revolving around King County, which is essentially the county that surrounds Seattle. And you all have made some fascinating, perhaps concerning discoveries. So if you can, maybe give us a quick overview of the study and the initial findings, please.
Yeah, so we recently, last week, published a study in the Journal of Emergency Medicine, Open Access. It's called Excess Cardiopulmonary Arrest After COVID-19 Vaccination in King County, Washington. And what we found was among 98% of the King County population that is vaccinated, received at least one dose, there is a 1,200% increase in excess cardiac arrest deaths, 25% increase overall in total cardiac arrests. And so the survival rate dropped of EMS attending these cardiac arrests, and cases of obvious death increased dramatically since the vaccines rolled out. So all of this cardiac arrests among a sample size of 2 million people in this county, we found that it takes about 2 million people to detect this sort of safety signal. Because if you look at other studies that are showing the COVID vaccines are safe, their cardiac safety profile is good, those studies have a really small sample size, nowhere near 2 million. So these findings are a very strong safety signal that must be considered by regulatory authorities to prevent any more cardiac arrests from happening.
If I understood correctly, you said 98% of the population there has been received one or more of the vaccinations. Is that right?
That's correct. 98% of the population that's eligible to receive a vaccination. So that's everyone over 6 months. It's a very large amount of people. And so everyone was exposed to the variable of interest in our study, which is one of the strengths of it.
Yeah. You mentioned too, the this is a large sample size. I mean, when we just got through talking about sample sizes in the past couple of weeks with folks because of varying sample sizes in the election polls. But this is a solid study because of the size of the universe that's been included in gathering data. Yeah. And so is there another phase to this to look even broader, or is this got enough teeth to it that it can be applied in multiple locations, perhaps?
Well, in this study, we applied it to the entire United States. So if the entire United States followed the trend of King County, we found about 49,000 deaths, excess cardiac arrest deaths, mm-hmm. Likely due to COVID vaccination. Now, the problem is we can't accurately estimate and use these findings towards other countries necessarily, because every country has different vaccine uptake. And, you know, another reason behind these cardiac arrests were lockdown measures, including, COVID vaccine mandates, the physical lockdowns, you can't leave your house, this increased cardiac arrest. People were afraid of going to the hospital. Yeah, during 2020, especially, mm-hmm. which also contributed to some of the excess deaths, and COVID-19 infection likely played a small part in these deaths. About 25% of the population could have been infected in King County, so that might have played a small role too. But overall, since most of the population was exposed to at least one dose of COVID vaccine, we can say that it definitely most likely contributed the most.
Have you been able to, in your data gathering, have you been able to identify any precursors or pre-symptoms, perhaps, that people experienced prior to a cardiac arrest itself?
Well, so these cardiac arrests due to the vaccine, we have another paper, it's in the preprint server now under review at some cardiology journals, mm-hmm. called the Risk Stratification for Future Cardiac Arrest After COVID Vaccination. And we describe the mechanisms and what can trigger these cardiac arrests. And so what happens is, so you get vaccinated, the mRNA travels through the bloodstream, it gets taken up into major organ systems, including the heart. And once it's in there, it starts to produce spike protein. So you have heart muscle cells producing spike protein. That's going to result in inflammatory consequences, including myocarditis. And, you know, a study with 99 million people in it, largest COVID vaccine safety study yet, found a 500% increased risk of myocarditis after vaccination, COVID vaccination specifically. So these shots increase your risk of myocarditis due to the spike protein in the heart. And then what happens is during the, if for symptomatic or asymptomatic myocarditis, we found that the trigger is actually in the morning hours, the morning waking hours, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., when there's a surge in catecholamines, including dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, and also during exercise or sports, when there's also a surge in these catecholamines. So we found that those are usually the triggers that will lead to ventricular tachycardia and VFib, and lead to sudden death.
Wow, that's fascinating. There's been a number of examples of folks dying in what many call really unusual circumstances, athletes and folks participating in sports that seem to have sudden cardiac arrest in the middle of participating. Would that be potentially one of the cases where these norepinephrine and epinephrine and so forth would be present in the body and might trigger this?
Yes, that's one of the primary triggers for this during intense exercise. And, you know, we saw back in 2021, a lot of the schools, sports teams mandated these shots for you to be able to play or to attend school.
Mm-hmm.
And even professional sports teams, they had mandates. The NFL had a mandate. The NHL had a mandate.
Right.
So they were just mandating these shots for these professional athletes. And that's likely why we saw such a drastic increase in these sudden cardiac arrests.
The early morning period is, to many, I think, might be surprising. What is it that occurs here that would trigger those same kind of conditions?
Yeah, so your body releases dopamine, norepinephrine, and epinephrine in order to wake up. You got to clear out the adenosine in order to fully wake up. And so this is part of the process. This is what happens. This is what starts to be released to prepare for the body to wake up. So, these catecholamines, they have an effect on the cardiovascular system, particularly if it's damaged.
Interesting. You mentioned that the following an injection of the vax, I think you, if I heard you correctly, the spike proteins actually begin to be produced within the heart muscle. Is that the finding?
Yeah. So there's a study by Bowmeyer and colleagues that actually looked inside. They actually biopsied injured cardiac tissue in patients with COVID vaccine myocarditis, and they found the spike protein physically within the heart. So that basically just put all the questions aside of to what's likely the primary cause of this. And it is likely the spike protein, it's either gets produced physically in the heart, or the spike protein travels to the heart through the bloodstream.
Then this particular illustration, if I'm interpreting it correctly, illustrates that then there's inflammation that is associated with that production and appears within the heart. And that's the substance or the underlying cause of myocarditis. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, that's correct. This is what we believe to be the underlying cause, at least the primary one. And as you can see on the left there, Yonker and colleagues, they found that the spike protein actually circulates, but there's ineffective antibodies that don't neutralize it. And so this allows the spike protein traveling in the bloodstream to reach the heart.
Interesting. One of the, this chart from part of your study was one of the things that caught my attention, because looking at, if I'm interpreting this correct, please correct me if I'm making wrong assumptions, but the trend prior to these vaccinations is indicated on this red line. So that would have been, you know, prior to excess death showing up. And then you see this, the chart indicating an increase, and it doesn't appear, at least on this data, to be slowing down or stopping. It's continuing up and to the right, which would, I believe, does this suggest that this continues to expand as a problem?
Yes, we believe that this is not going away, that the cardiac tissue has been damaged in a large portion of the population, increasing their risk of cardiac arrest. And yeah, so that red trend line you see there is from 20. So that's from 2015 to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
That was the average. That was the combined average of cardiac arrest deaths. And so as you can see, this blue line is the specific data points, and you can see it just skyrocket over what's expected, absolutely skyrocket. And there's no sign of it slowing down at all. We'll have to wait for the 2024 data to see if it does make it a nice little calm down, which we hope it will. But yeah, since a majority of the population has taken these, likely a large amount, particularly in King County, suffered subclinical or clinical vaccine myocarditis, this may not slow down in the distant future.
So that would then lead us, I think, to a key question, which is, you know, for folks that that have taken either the vax or booster or both, what are the things they should be considering to, one, identify if this is present within their body and potentially take action to mitigate any further damage? Are there mechanisms to pursue that?
Yes. So what's most needed right now, the single most important thing I think that we need, is a spike protein test. Just directly an assay that just, there, a urine test or blood test, detects how much spike protein is physically in the body mm-hmm. at that current time. What we have now is we have antibody tests that indirectly measure the spike protein to see how much antibodies we have against it. And a high number indicates usually you had more spike protein. A lower number over time, testing over time, indicates that it's going away. It's clearing out of the body. Now, Dr. McCullough has developed a protocol, base spike protein detoxification, and we have this published in the journal Curious. So what this is it's actually three natural products with high safety profiles. These include bromelain, curcumin, and natokinase. And so what these three compounds do is they're proteolytic, so they degrade proteins, and they're anticoagulants, so they can help bust open these spike protein induced clots that we've seen so frequently. And so that's what we have so far. You know, we need the Biden administration spent $1 billion on long COVID research, but it doesn't seem like we really have any results from that. So we would need to see some randomized clinical trials. You know, we need more government funding. Hopefully with this new administration, we can start to actually find real solutions for the millions of people that have been injured.
Yeah, and it does seem to be millions based on the numbers and the reports that we're hearing currently, doesn't it? But I think it's important that folks know those things. And say one more time, please, where it was brought out. You mentioned a particular publication.
For the base spike detoxification one?
Yes, sir.
That was in the journal Curious.
Journal Curious, okay. So as we go forward, you all are continuing to research in many areas, I know. Perhaps as we go forward. Oh, there was one other comment I want to make. Some folks heard Redfield from the CDC, I want to say about 4 months ago, seemed to imply that over time the body would do its own breakdown and detoxification of the spike protein. The other piece of your findings would suggest that in at least some cases that's not true. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, so a study by Brogna and colleagues found the spike protein to last for at least 6 months in the body. Mm-hmm. There's a study by De Michelle, found spike proteins in blood clots of vaccinated individuals about a year after. So this is a very persistent substance, very toxic substance, that the body has a very difficult time clearing with innate clearing mechanisms. And so we're actually unsure how long this lasts and if the body can naturally get rid of it. It likely can, but it'll take a very long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, until we have more comprehensive studies on the persistence and the clearance of spike protein from the human body, we won't know the complete answer.
Right. Perhaps all the more reason for folks to take take time to research the ways to proactively try to get rid of it. Again, Dr. McCullough, yourself and others have been wonderful at bringing out these findings so that people can better understand what they're facing. I wanted to share some of the places that they can continue to watch what you all are bringing out and continue to learn so that this study, but others as they come forth, can be identified. Perhaps you could share places that you all typically bring out your information.
Sure. So you can follow Courageous Discourse, our Substack.
Mm-hmm.
It includes me, Dr. McCullough, John Leake. We're posting comprehensive studies, comprehensive insights every single day. And you can also follow the McCullough Foundation X account. We're also on all platforms,
mm-hmm.
not just X. And you can follow my personal X account on X as well, which is just at NIC Holscher. And so every day we're posting valuable insights. We're pumping out the research. We're performing investigative scholarship. We have public policy insights that we're putting out all the time, particularly some recommendations for the new administration.
Mm-hmm.
And we also do other things such as a physician and public education, so providing materials such as graphical abstracts and such for new studies that come out. We also pursue the expert participation in justice. So Dr. McCullough has had many, many, many court appearances where he is assisting those that have been harmed by these injections or censored for what they've done. And so, yeah, please go give us a follow. We would very much appreciate it. And you can also visit our website at McCulloughFND.org.
Great, great. Thank you again for making time today. I think this is just one of the areas that folks need to get their eyeballs on and potentially take action on their own behalf. Door is always open. As new findings come out, please let us know, and we'll be happy to help spread the word on those, and we appreciate you being here today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I look forward to joining your show again.
That's great. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks.